Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will join us for his weekly conversation at 1 o'clock. And speaking of the Tennessee Titans, as I said before the break, I always enjoy when national NFL shows or podcasts talk about the Tennessee Titans, because quite frankly, it doesn't happen a lot. And usually the people discussing the Tennessee Titans, you can tell they haven't watched a lot of Titans football. So you have to take what they say with a grain of salt. But there is a NFL podcast that I listen to on a regular basis, the Ringer NFL Show, starring Steven Ruiz, Deontay Lee, and Shiel Kapadia. And the three of them, I think, do an outstanding job. They clearly pay attention to everything that's going around in the NFL. And they had an episode recently where they graded the off seasons of each team in each division. So, of course, when the AFC South episode launched, I made sure to listen to it, and no disrespect to the Texans, Jags, and Colts, but I just skipped right past that to get to the Titans. So this was Steven Ruiz of the NFL's, of the Ringer NFL Show, I should say. This is Steven Ruiz discussing how he would grade the Titans offseason. And listen to the end of this clip, because when I heard it, it made me laugh a little bit.
On Ruiz, you look at this offseason for the Tennessee Titans, what is your grade?
I'm going to give him an A, because I'm more interested in watching the Titans than I've ever been in my entire life after the offseason, just because I think you're adding a quarterback who is very exciting to watch. For me, one of my favorite quarterbacks I've watched, quarterback prospects I've watched over the last couple of years. Not saying he's one of the best, just one of the more fun ones. And I also like they took, it wasn't just like on the offense and defense. They remade their special teams, which was an issue at times last year. Or it was a big issue, actually, if you look at the numbers. I think that might make a difference where we're not necessarily giving them credit during the offseason, but when you look back on the special teams, you make a huge gain there. I think that will make a big deal in the standings, make a big difference in the standings. And defensively, like, I like the pieces. I'm interested to see where they go the second year in this system. This Mike McDonald system was the one former Mike McDonald assistant who didn't get into the top 10 or get near a top 10 defense. But I think that Denard Wilson is going to have a way better year in season two. I don't see them being competitive yet, but I think they could win like 5 games, which is a big upgrade from where they were. And I think you're going to be optimistic about the quarterback situation going forward, whether Brian Callahan is the guy that's going to lead Cam Ward over the next 10 years or so in his career.
So that was my favorite part. I give him an A. They're not going to be competitive, though. They may win 5 games. That made me laugh. And he touched on special teams, man, in that clip, and we will get back to special teams because there was an interesting conversation about that. But that made me laugh. I give him an A. They may not win 5 games. but he likes where they're going.
He was saying all these good things,
yeah,
and positive things about the Titans. And then he gives him a good grade. But then he says, well, they win 3, 4 games, 5 games.
Right. So his podcast co-host, Deontay Lee, was asked the same question. And he gave the Titans a B. He said it would have been a B plus or an A minus if the Titans had done more at receiver. He focused on the improved offensive line, at least on paper, and thinks the Titans could be a 6 or 7 win team. But then again, I just thought it was funny when Ruiz said, I'm going to give him an A. They'll win 5 games, maybe. But go ahead.
And honestly, you know, when you really think about it, if it goes the way he says, right, mm-hmm, interesting team to watch, and he's implying that Cam Ward in this scenario where he's giving them an A will be worthy of a pick that you're like, okay, I think they've got something here, and they win 5, that's probably better than winning 7, honestly, because they need to pick high. Let's be honest. They're so far away from having a complete roster that you really feel like can compete. The only way to do that is to, I shouldn't say the only way. You got to get very lucky with, you know, if you pick 13th or 15th, winning 7 games, or you pick 5th or 6th, and you have a crack at getting something a lot better.
I think that they, you know, win as many games as you possibly can. That's the way I feel about it, because the whole goal is to develop the quarterback. And if you're developing a quarterback and the quarterback is headed down the right track and y'all winning games because of it, then that's the win-win. You know, you look at what the Commanders were able to do. I mean, it would have been great for them to have a losing season so they would be able to build on what Jaden Daniels, who he is, but they didn't. But you know what? They don't have. They didn't have to. Why? Because they hit on the one position that you must hit on, and that's the quarterback. So to me, if the Titans, if Cam Ward develops and they win 7 or 8 games, I'm all right with it that they're not picking high. Why? Because the whole goal is to develop the quarterback for the long run. And if we're developing him and they're winning games, then look at Kansas City. Look at some of these other teams that probably don't have stacked rosters, but they have a hell of a quarterback, and that neutralizes or equalizes a lot of things out there. So to me, as long as he's developing, and again, I'm not saying that he's Patrick Mahomes, but when you look at teams – Like Kansas City, where every position may not be, they may not be littered with all pros. They got 3 or 4 guys that they count on. But more importantly, the guy underneath center is the equalizer, because we can have a lesser team, but if we had a better quarterback, he's going to elevate us. So as long as Cam Ward is developing and getting better, they can win 10 games. I don't care. But if he's developing, that's all I want. I don't want to have to pick high again.
Yeah, 10. Okay, sign me up.
No, I'm not saying they're winning, but I'm saying if they do win, like, I'm glad.
Derek learned his lesson from last season when he said the Titans would have a winning record.
And don't misunderstand. Like, you don't want to not win games. But I think the momentum is the key. Mm-hmm. I like the New England from last year, the Drake May. They didn't win a lot of games, but Drake May played well enough to where they feel pretty good about Drake May. Now, you could say a few years ago they felt pretty good about Mac Jones after the first year, but I think they had more of a veteran roster around him at that time than they had with May, where they had nothing around him, and May still shined, but it didn't equate to wins. Mm-hmm. But it put them in a position to draft high again. I don't think we can be sitting here in 2 years saying, yeah, keep losing and getting those high picks. But I think for one more year, I'd love to have a high pick one more time. Just to get it. They need another stud. They need another guy that moves the needle.
My question is, just how much do we think that this Titans roster has improved? Because John Glennon over at Nashville Post, he compiled what Pro Football Focus has been doing recently. And we talked about some of the lists that Pro Football Focus has been putting out. Excuse me. They've been ranking the top 32 players at each of 12 positions. And that, according to Glennon, there were 7 Titans among the 384 possibilities at the various spots. PFF didn't list a single Titan among its top 32 ranked players at 7 positions: offensive tackle, tight end, wide receiver, edge rusher, linebacker, cornerback, or safety. So PFF does not like the Titans roster. You hear Steven Ruiz say, I'd give him an A. His co-host Deontay Lee said, I'll give him a B. I would have given him a B+ or an A- if they had done more at receiver. So both of them had positive things to say about the Titans roster, but Pro Football Focus thought that only 7 Titans out of a total of 384 possibilities were good enough to make these lists of the top players, the top 32 players at every position.
They're giving them an A on coming off of a brutal year where they were terrible and doing what they could to try and fix it. And, of course, a huge part of that A is drafting Cam Ward, right, and feeling good. As good as you can feel on June 9th or whatever this is today. Like, how do you know what you have in Cam Ward? We have no idea. But this is them filling the summertime. It's their observation. But they're coming at it from a context. Obviously, if you're saying you're giving them an A and they're going to win 5 games, they're saying this was an awful team last year. And so when you're an awful team, your roster is in shambles. And I think we got to make sure we're pounding home that point. You don't fix this where they are in a year. You do not.
No, you don't. I mean, if you we've had this conversation, you know, over and over again about the lack of depth with the Tennessee Titans. Do I think they're trying to, you know, improve it? Yes, I do. But only, you know, we only find out once the season gets started. We can, You know, we can feel good about some of the acquisitions they made. We can feel good about the draft. But until they actually start playing, then that's when we will know how improved the bottom of this roster is. Because with a team like this, I mean, listen, you have to improve the bottom in order to sustain the top, which means you got to build your roster up. You got to get those things that you haven't had, because that allows you to, if anything goes wrong at the top, now those guys that are on the bottom of the roster or those guys that are backups, now they're able to fill the void that those veteran players or those starters were filling, you know, while they were playing, because it's inevitable. You're going to have injuries. The Titans' problem over the last couple of years have been they've had too many injuries and not enough valuable replacements for those injuries. And the only way you can do that is that you get your depth right. You get your depth at a place where if you do lose a guy for a game or two, your play doesn't dip.
So quickly, here are the Titans players who did appear on PFF's list. Cam Ward at quarterback, number 25 out of 32. Tony Pollard at running back, number 18 out of 32. Kevin Zeitler, the highest rated, tied for the highest rated, I should say. Kevin Zeitler at guard, number 9. Peter Skoronski at guard, number 20. Lloyd Cushenberry at center, number 20. Jeffrey Simmons at interior defensive lineman, number 9. And Devondre Sweat, same position, number 26. So Zeitler at number 9 for guard, Simmons at number 9 for interior lineman. Those were the 7 Titans players who ended up on this list.
I'm encouraged by Skoronski and Zeitler off the top of my head. I mean, that sounds, especially for Skoronski, right? Quietly, you know, it's always going to be, he's going to have to beat the rap of he was picked 11th and he hasn't lit the world on fire, and he's playing at a position that is usually fillable a little easier than other positions, right? So he's got to be really good. But I think he, like Brian Callahan said, he quietly had a pretty good step up from year one to year two, and I'm hoping there's another step coming.
So according to PFF, this is what they wrote about Peter Skoronski. Quote, from a season-long viewpoint, Skoronski doesn't move the needle much, but there's an argument to be made that he closed out the year as the best pass protector at the position. From week 12 onward, Skoronski produced the highest PFF pass blocking grade, 88.2, among guards. At just 24 years old, that strong finish should set up a breakout 2025.
Well, you hope. You know, this has been it seems like it's been a long road for Peter Skoronski, you know, from coming in and having, you know, issues at that position and, you know, questioning, you know, a lot of people questioning, was that the right move to make? And people are still questioning, considering that he hadn't made an All-Pro or Pro Bowl. But what is happening is he is just quietly getting better, and he may turn out to just be a damn good player, a solid player that nobody talks about, which is good, because if I ain't talking about you, that means you're doing your job, okay? Because usually we ain't talking about guards. We're talking about tackles when they're doing a good job, and guards sort of fall by the wayside. But I think I'm encouraged, too, like you said, Willie, that Peter Skoronski has worked himself into being mentioned, but even though he still have a long way to go. And they're just said, I think they're setting up this offensive line to be, you know, probably the most improved area on their team. You just hope that Cushenberry is able to come back. And when he does come back, he's ready to jump in there and go. But outside of that, I think this position will probably be the most improved position on the roster.
Yeah, I think it's a good goal. If that line, after all of the lampooning that we've done over it over the last couple years about it, if that can turn into a mini strength, once again, I'm not comparing him to the early 90s Cowboys or the 80s Washington Redskins, back when they were called the Redskins. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just something that doesn't kill your team week in and week out. Mm-hmm. Right? If they can just start and also be sitting there going, we now have our guys. Right, we can bring, in theory, we could bring these same 5 back next year in Cam Ward's second year. Right, that now you're building something. Now you got a little something to work with.
Good news, everybody. Our text line is back. Hot diggity. Ooh, so we will catch up on your text. But here's one thing. So of those seven players.
Where were the vines, man? Nobody called us on the vine, man. Nobody took advantage.
So here are the of the seven players that PFF ranked, three were on the offensive line. Two guards, Zeitler and Skoronski, and center, Cushenberry. The one, to me, notable omission, Derek, Calvin Ridley. Did not make the list of the top 32 receivers in the NFL.
I was surprised. 30 receivers? Gosh. He didn't make the top 30? That's mind-boggling. Really, it is. That he didn't make the top 30 receivers. Did they have a list who the 30 receivers were?
I am doing that right now, my friend.
Because I could think off the top of my head, he's definitely not in the top 10. But beyond that.
All right, so this was from May 21st. So I'll read from the bottom up. So I'll go from 32 up. Mm-hmm. Jameson Williams of the Lions, Cortland Sutton of the Broncos, Deebo Samuel, now of the Commanders, Josh Downs in Indianapolis, Rashee Rice in Kansas City, Jackson Smith and Jigba with the Seahawks.
Hold on. Yes. Rashee Rice in Kansas City.
He was ranked 28th.
He barely even played last year.
He missed a significant portion of the season.
See, that's where, right there, I will listen because you are giving me the list, but that right there tells me this list that he has is just bogus. It's bogus. How do you throw Rashee Rice in there? He hadn't even played. He barely played last season. I don't get that.
615-737-1025. Our text line is operational, so you can text us about what the Ringer NFL show had to say and what Pro Football Focus had to say about the Titans roster. But coming up next, there was something in that clip from Steven Ruiz that we are going to go a little bit more in depth on because there is a unit on the Tennessee Titans that we don't talk about too much unless we're making fun of it. But it could help the Titans win a few more games this season. And we'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. It's raining cats and dogs outside. Not literally, of course. If someone says, it's literally raining cats and dogs, you have my permission to smack them upside the head because that is the wrong use of the term literally. But it's raining out there, so if you're driving, take it slow.
I saw you walking in the rain.
Not familiar.
Yeah, I think that's Alexander O'Neill, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. You were holding hands and I will never be the same. So he saw, I don't think it was his girl, but somebody he really liked. He saw her and another guy walking in the rain.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, it is bad. So that was the whole premise of the song. See? Uh-huh.
We can all relate, right? Exactly. Willie, I'm sure you've seen your girl walking with some other guy in the rain at some point in your life.
He has.
Have you guys got me?
Mahoney.
We got you, Willie.
He saw Mahoney and Aaron walking in the rain. There you go.
Okay, first of all, that was Orange Juice Jones. Let's not make any mistake, not
O'Neal. I thought it was Alexander O'Neal.
Orange Juice Jones?
You're right.
O-R-A-N. Orange Juice Jones.
Yeah. But if you say it real fast, it's Orange Juice Jones.
That's what I thought you were going with.
And not only was it his girl. He had some payback involved at the end of the song.
Yes,
you remember?
Yes, I remember.
He called her out. Yeah, he called her out. He cut up the credit card, and he tossed her. He threw her out.
Yeah,
she was done. She was caught red-handed, and that was it for the relationship. Orange Juice Jones was not happy. About her walking in the ring.
Or you just call him Orange Juice Jones.
Yeah.
Now it's coming back to me.
He'll never be the same.
There was a spoof about this music video on Saturday Night Live several years ago with Donald Glover playing Raz P. Berry. That makes so much sense now.
Oh, there you go, see?
Al said, Adam, I agree. I just stepped in a big poodle. Get it? Poodle, raining cats and dogs, puddle.
Yeah, there you go.
We get it, Al.
Nice. You should have saved that for
dad jokes. Dad jokes are on Friday, my friend, but that was a good one. Okay. So back to the Titans. We were talking about what the Ringer NFL show had to say about the Titans. And Steven Ruiz, in giving the Titans an A, despite the fact that he thinks they may win only five games, mentioned the special teams. So later in that same episode, Steven Ruiz and his co-host Deontay Lee focused specifically on the special teams. Here is what they said about the Titans special teams units.
I do think they've gone in a lot of places on the roster. They've gone from below replacement to just above replacement, which I think is in the aggregate, it's going to make a big deal. And the special teams point, I don't think we can belabor it enough. Like, they were not only dead last in special teams DVOA, their DVOA was minus 8.4%, and the next team was minus 5.6. So there was a 3% gap between those two. And I remember that Lions game, one of the weirdest games ever, where the Lions like lived in the red zone because of the special teams issues Tennessee had. And it was like an all year thing. So I think remaking that new special teams coordinator with Bones Fossil coming in, new place kicker, new punter, I think we're going to see them, you know, gain some stuff in the margins.
I mean, literally an abject disaster. Yeah, like almost every week, something was going wrong on special teams, even if it wasn't as explosive as that Lions game, where I think they had like a kick return and a punt return housed in multiple special teams plays that landed the ball on the wrong side of the 50-yard line for the Titans. They went out and got Johnny Hecker, I think, to go play, to be their punter, who's a very dependable guy, even if his leg isn't as big as it was a few years ago. I think that they've addressed, you know, they brought in a returner of their own in Chimera Dike in the draft. He should be pretty good for them, a 4-3 guy who can kind of help them out in the return game. There's just so many marginal improvements for this team. It's pretty clearly better for me in that respect. And you did what you needed to do, which is address the quarterback position. Even if I'm out on Brian Callahan as Steven is, I just feel like the roster is so much better positioned for them to not be an embarrassing watch. I mean, doing power rankings and having to watch this team on a week-by-week basis was a chore. Maybe the biggest chore out of anybody in the NFL.
Speaking to me personally, watching the Titans was indeed the biggest chore.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking,
and
I'm
I have to
sure
do a lot of chores around the house, but that was indeed the biggest chore. I would rather sweep the driveway sometimes than watch the 2024 Tennessee Titans play football. But they focused a lot on special teams. And Willie, I know that you referenced the DVOA fancy stat talking about special teams. They touched on it there. The Titans not only had the worst special teams unit in the NFL based on that number, it was by a wide margin. It wasn't, they were 32nd and there was a team slightly above them. There was a pretty sizable gap between the effectiveness of the Tennessee Titans special teams unit and the next worst special teams unit in the NFL.
You brought up the stat. D-Mace will remember, because I was pounding it into his head and Caroline's head until they were both saying, okay, enough with the DVOA, all right? I hear you. But it wasn't just the stat, right? I think you could even not even look at that stat and just have watched them each one Sunday and said, if they had average special teams, they probably would have won three more games, right? They handed three games to the opposition with disastrous special teams starting in week one.
Yeah, excuse me. Drink a little water here. Listen, I don't think people understand how important special teams is until, you know, there's a big play or a key mess up, key blunder. And we've seen the Titans, and they've had their shares, so much so it got their punter hurt, which I think ultimately led to him being released, because I don't think he ever regained that confidence that he had prior to breaking his leg on that punt. So you basically, you know, railroaded a punter's career because y'all didn't know what y'all were doing up front. So for the last couple of seasons, this team has been horrible at special teams. And one thing that I do know about special teams is that it's an energizer for both the offense and the defense. You just don't know how when offenses come out. And I looked at the Titans' starting position. It's the 27-yard line. In the old football, that's great because you get a lot of return balls. And if you're starting at the 27, 28 in the old football, that's great. But nowadays, because the ball automatically starts at the 25, you getting two more yards, it's not a big thing. Then you look above them and you see the Dallas Cowboys, who returned 2 touchdowns. And they, when their offense got on the field after a kickoff, they averaged, their average starting point was like the 35 yard line, somewhere around there. That helps tremendously. That helps an offense tremendously. That helps with the game planning and how we're going to run plays and everything else, because now we got a shorter field. When I got to sit here and go 80 yards, when I got to sit here and run back out there as a defense after a block punt, man, that stuff is demoralizing. And the special teams, they've had their share of demoralizing plays over the course of the last 3 years. And hopefully, adding Bones Fossil, I know him. I know what type of coach he was early on. I knew what type of coach his dad was. So if he's anything like his dad, he's a great coach to me, at least. But he's a guy that cares about his job. It's wherever he's been, the special teams has been good. Whether he was an assistant in Baltimore, that special teams unit was good. Or when he became a special teams coach, his special teams units were good. So that's going to be a critical piece of the team that will help them out if indeed they get the most out of those units, whether it's the punt return, punt, or kick and kickoff return.
Let's stick on Bones Fossil for a minute.
Just, yeah, a quick thing, because Bones Fossil, he's coming into such a no-lose situation. It would be hard to be that bad again on special teams. I don't care who the coach is. The three of us could go in there and we might luck ourselves into doing better than they did last year, just if we don't have 3 punts blocked for touchdowns, right? But I do think that another little detail besides Fossil, and I know you're going to get to Fossil, Adam, is the punter, Hecker. I think we're going to find how important the directional game is, the nuances of meshing how you punt the ball with how the coverage is. I don't think Ryan Stonehouse really adapted to that.
No, I don't think he did either. But I think a lot of it, if you're asking me, I think a lot of it had to do with the injury. I think eventually, you know, a guy with a strong leg like that, you hope that you can, you know, teach him or develop him so he can use that strong leg in the right way. And I do believe that he was headed down that road. But the minute he broke his leg, I think he just lost all confidence, man. And he never regained what he had going for him, you know, prior to the injury. He still got a strong leg, but what's a strong leg if you can't, you know, put it in positions where the, you know, coach wants you to put it?
My question for you, Derek, about Bones Fossil, knowing him as you do, are there any nuances to how the Titans will approach special teams that are different from previous special teams coaches?
See, I don't know. You know, because I don't know what they were teaching in the room. Now, the last coach could have been teaching everything, but the players, they didn't go out there and execute it the way it was taught, plain and simple. So I know Bones Fossil will be innovative. He will try out-of-the-box things. But they're going to be a disciplined squad. At least that's what he's envisioning. And he's going to put the players. He's going to put the best players out there, and I think Brian Callahan needs to. This is the Titans are at a critical point right now where special teams, they need all hands on deck, and when I say all hands on deck, we may need some of those starters playing special teams too, because again, this team is not in a position where, you know, outside of a couple, obviously the quarterback and maybe a couple other guys, we're not in a position to say, you can just be on offense or you just can be on defense. No, we need y'all to be playing on special teams as well, because typically when you – good special teams, at least to my knowledge, to my experience, good special teams, especially the kickoff return and punt return, you have a mix of starting guys and those backup guys, but backup guys that do have the potential of starting, that makes your team good. If the bottom of your roster is good, and I've said this before, if the bottom of your roster is good, your special teams will be good. Point blank.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on the Titans special teams and how much it could impact the Titans bottom line in terms of wins and losses. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. We're going to bump him up a segment. So you don't even have to wait until 1 o'clock to listen to Teron Davenport because he's coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. Some quick breaking news from Adam Schefter of ESPN. The Colts have announced the transition of team ownership from late owner and CEO Jim Irsay to his daughters, Carly Irsay Gordon, Casey Foyt, and Kaylin Jackson. But let's go to our phone line driven by Wilson County.
You didn't even acknowledge the Orange Juice's, Juice Jones's presence there? Coming out, you didn't let that breathe at all, Adam.
I'm sorry. We've got a Orange guest juice. On our phone line driven Orange by Wilson County, Hyundai.com.
I'll bet you TD knows about it.
All right, let's ask Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, joining us on our phone line driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Are you a fan of that song, Teron?
Absolutely. I love the part where he said, I bought you stuff you couldn't even pronounce. he said, you silly rabbit.
Tricks are for kids.
All right. I'm sorry.
There's never been a song before or since quite like that one.
No.
The video, man, when he told her she was dismissed and the way he did it. Hilarious.
Teron, one thing that the Titans hope isn't hilarious to all of us this season is the special teams unit. We were just talking about Bones Fossil and how that special teams unit, if it can be respectable, it could help the Titans significantly from a year ago. Based on what you've been able to gather and talking to Bones Fossil and to some of the other players who are on the special teams unit, are there any changes, any nuances to how Fossil approaches special teams versus the previous coaches that could help the Titans moving forward?
Yeah, he's very detailed, and the energy is crazy. That's the thing that I really picked up, man. I love his energy, and like he's on top of the guys, just motivating them, and the details are there. But I've seen two practices, so like take that for what it's worth. I can't give you like any changes as far as like scheme or anything like that, but you could definitely tell that there's a lot of attention to it. I would be surprised if special teams isn't remarkably better.
Well, let me ask you about the change at punter. Ryan Stonehouse is out. Johnny Hecker is in. Is there a way that Hecker approaches punting that is different than Stonehouse that could help the Titans?
Well, I know Hecker is better as far as a locational, like coffin corner, like those types of things. I know he's better there. Stonehouse, he has a boot, and he puts that thing out there. Sometimes he did outkick the coverage. I just think really more than the punter is going to be the coverage unit. Like they have to make sure that that part is together. And if that's together, then they'll be fine.
So mandatory minicamp is about to begin this week. All eyes, I'm sure, will be on Jeffrey Simmons, who did not participate in the voluntary OTAs. And yes, we know that they are voluntary. I'm curious how you think Jeffrey Simmons is going to handle questions about his absence and voluntary OTAs. What do you think he'll say, and how do you think he should respond to maybe lower the temperature for those who were upset by his absence, at least not in the building, but outside the building?
Yeah, well, one thing you could say about Jeffrey Simmons is he always stands up and he faces the music, right? That was the guy after losses every week, we were in the locker room and waiting for him, and he'll turn around and see us and be like, all right, let's go. So I think when you look at how he's going to face the music, really the best thing for him is to get it out of the way. Hey, I was away. This is what I worked on. This is what my goal was for games this off season. And now that I'm back, I'm all in, like something along those lines. And I think that's what he's going to say. He's a leader. He's one of the leaders of those eight teams that they have broken into. And I I wouldn't expect nothing less than him being accountable for, you know, not being there and just giving an explanation and moving on.
Now, Teron, how do you think they approach, you know, now that they are in their phase of training, you know, camp where it's mandatory? Because, you know, during voluntary camp, you can kind of, you know, with the quarterbacks, you can kind of do whatever you want. You know, yeah, you're going first, you're going second. I get it. But as the days start dwindling down, when you have less and less of these days to have, to be together as a team, how do you think their approach now, the play or the, you know, the reps with Will Levis and Cam Ward? Because, again, you don't have many days to just play with here.
Yeah, that's a good point. They started to tweak it, in my opinion, last week, because when I was watching, Cam Ward had like maybe five reps, and then Levis came in for three, and then Cam came right back in. So to me, they kind of started redistributing it, and I think it's understandable that Cam Ward gets as much reps as possible because we know he's going to start, right? And so they're going to start getting him geared up. But the good thing is, you know, in talking to Cam on the side, you know, he was kind of telling me how he gets those mental reps too, you know, and that's something that will also help him when he's not out there on the field getting the mental reps and talking through it with the other, you know, receivers and even the other quarterbacks. So, I would imagine it's going to start to skew even more in Cam's favor to get him more and more reps.
Now, what do you think the battle will be like for that second receiver spot? I know we can throw three or four guys in there, and it seems like possibly Van Jefferson may be at the top at this particular moment. But how do you see that playing out for that second wide receiver position? Because you got like three or four guys that can actually step into that role.
Yeah, no.
Outside of Lockett, because I see Lockett as their slot guy, their third guy.
Right.
But exactly. I'm saying a bona fide number two guy.
Yeah, I think Elik Iomanner is a good candidate for that X spot. Bryce Oliver could play it too. So it's going to be, you know, you got Colton Dow even, Prochet. So there's a lot of guys that compete for it. I think ideally that's a position that Iomanner wins and gives them, you know, that vertical guy, that on-the-ball receiver that could stretch the field and do some of the things, you know, the back shoulders, throws, and all of that. So I would imagine Iomanner, but, I mean, look, like, Traylon Burks, we'll see, you know, what happens with him as he continues to get worked into there. So there's so many candidates for that spot. Ideally, Iomanner wins that.
So, Teron, you just said something that caught my attention. Do we feel like Traylon Burks will be out there day in and day out in the offseason in training camp? Because there's been no talk of him, right? Everybody has sort of swept him aside as, okay, we're moving on to the next thing. But he's still there. So is he healthy?
No, he's not fully healthy. He's still working his way back. You could tell he still also has to get – into better shape too, which is understandable. You know, your knee's messed up. Like you can't really exercise and do the things that you normally do. So it's going to be a journey for him. I would imagine maybe training camp. I don't know, but I mean, just judging by like seeing him during individual period, like he's doing all those drills and the ladder work and all of that. So I would imagine he's close, and I would think training camp he'll be back.
Okay, I'm going to wave a magic wand, and I'm going to tell you, Teron, that next year, the same five offensive linemen that are scheduled to be the offensive linemen to start this year are back next year. In other words, they have continuity for the first time in I don't know how long, same five guys. What would that mean for the Titans?
Oh, that would mean a lot. It would be the first time in a long time, like you said. I mean, what, maybe 4 years or so, like since they had set continuity. So yeah, it would be important, but I think Kevin Zeitler is one that I will see if he's back next. He's on a 1 year deal. We'll see if he's back, but I know him being here this year is going to be major for them.
Just before I send it back to the crew, LGM is in order here. Yes, absolutely. Mets back in first place. Phils and Braves struggling, trying to take advantage of this there. TD, let's get a little breathing room here.
Yeah, I mean, look, what is it, 18 games over 500? Now, granted, he got to beat up on the Rockies, so that helped. But, yeah, I mean, Ronnie Mauricio, he hit a 465-footer. You know, we could shift this to some Mets talk. Absolutely, man. I would gladly do that.
Hey, man, listen, y'all all right. Y'all know Tigers, but y'all all right, you know?
You crazy.
D-Mace, I'm surprised this is the first time you're bringing them up. I mean, they're unbelievable.
I'm just saying.
You need to get on that bandwagon and start watching and start, you know, bringing it.
I mean, y'all
are singing the praises.
But y'all know Tigers, you know, Mets. I mean,
for those that are casual baseball fans who haven't paid attention, the Tigers have the best record in baseball.
Yes.
Yep.
So there you go, man. I'm gonna be humble about mine. You know, I'm just gonna be humble about it.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation, Titans reporter, joining us on D-Mace, Fink, and Adonic, as he does every Monday. TD, great stuff as always.
Adam, not chiming in on the Nats.
No.
Why would he?
He said, we're talking baseball. I'm going to end it on that note. But about Nick Frazier, though, man, the intro music was on point, man. It's raining, and I saw you walking in the rain. Like, that's, yeah.
Well, you can thank Nick Frazier for that one. TD, great stuff as always, my friend.
All
we'll talk next week.
For sure. Take care.
Yep. The Treylon Burks thing, you know, I just.
I get what you're saying.
It's just amazing that he's still there. Like, but remember that Dylan Radins was not as hyped up, not even close, but he was cast off in the same manner, right? He was like, can we please? I can't believe he's still on the team. Why is he still there? And he turned his career around to become somebody who earned another contract and became a serviceable NFL offensive lineman. Where is Radins now?
I have no idea.
He's with somebody, though.
Yeah, he's in the NFL. He's on the team, but I have no idea where he's at.
I want to say he's on the Packers. No, he's on the Saints. He's actually on the Saints.
Oh, yes.
The Saints. Your team. There we go, Adam.
What was his contract?
But notice how I didn't even remember that. I thought he was on the Packers for some reason.
Yeah. Can we look up real quick what kind
Robbie.
Of – did he sign a one-year deal?
He signed a one-year contract with the Saints.
$2.2 million.
$2.2 million. That's interesting that the Titans were like, nah, we could have him back for $2.2. We'll try to get something else. At the same time, he's still in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I think Burks is right now. He's trying to stay in the league. That's his goal, is to make it through the year on the roster. And I think we'll believe it when we see it.
I was reading something about the Miami Dolphins in the Miami Herald. And they did not have great words for our old friend Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
Ooh.
They said, quote, the Dolphins signed Nick Westbrook-Ikhine to a two-year deal worth $6 million, hoping he would beef up Miami's smurfish, that's a great word, smurfish receiver unit. But the five-year veteran has sparingly made plays during the practices the media has attended.
They don't know Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, okay? It ain't about practice, even though he practiced well here. Just put him in a game. Just put Nick Westbrook in a game, and he going to get you a touchdown. That's all you need to do.
I like the word smurfish. That's a good word.
Hey, you don't remember the Smurfs back in the day?
Of course I remember the Smurfs.
No, I'm not talking about the movie or the cartoon. Back in the day, who were the Smurfs? Was it Atlanta receivers?
In the NFL, you mean?
Yeah, was it Atlanta receivers or was it Miami? Willie,
good question.
They were called the Smurfs. Was it Washington?
There's a Wikipedia article known as the Fun Bunch. The Fun Bunch were the wide receivers and tight ends of the Redskins.
Yeah, it was the Redskins. Right. They called them the Smurfs.
And they weren't known as the Smurfs?
There was a subgroup in the Fun Bunch. This is fantastic. Yeah. In the Fun Bunch, there was a subgroup nicknamed the Smurfs.
Yes,
there was
Smurf.
A group
right.
within
Clark,
the group.
It was the two Clark brothers.
Alvin Garrett.
Clark.
Charlie Brown. And Virgil
Art Monk.
Virgil C.
Clark was later.
Art Monk, I guess, was in the Fun Bunch.
But he was not in the Smurfs.
Yeah, he wasn't in the Smurfs.
He was too big to be a Smurf.
So it was the Funk Bunch and the Smurf. Who was the Clark? They came later, right?
Gary Clark. Gary Clark, man, he was a good player.
He came a little bit later, but he was a part of the old.
I love when there's a click within
the
click.
You slipped it in there without any comment, but yes, there was a guy named Charlie Brown.
Yeah, Charlie Brown. Yes,
they won the Super Bowl in 82, the strike shortened year, and then made it again in 83. And got slammed by the Raiders. But they almost won back-to-back. That was the John Riggins, the Hogs, and that was the wide receiver crew. That was a heck of a team.
Oh, man.
As I said, I love when there's a click within the click. You have the larger click, and then you have the sub-click.
I remember that. I was like, wait a minute, it was the fun bunch. But, yeah, it was both.
Wasn't that Marky Mark? Wasn't he the fun bunch?
Yeah, Marky Mark and the fun bunch. Wasn't that Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah,
he don't want you to talk
that
about
that. That was a little later.
Yes.
He don't want you to talk about that anymore. That's about 10 years after that.
All right. 615-737-1025. College sports radically changed on Friday night. And there are a lot of different ways we can take this. But I was reading something about the fallout from this settlement in the NCAA. And is it possible that a phenomenon in professional sports could find its way to college athletics? We will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingan. 1025-1063, The Game.